This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me again this Tuesday for another hour of old-time radio, beginning with this week, a series called Confession. We'll hear an episode titled The George S. Decker Case from August 15th, 1953. Then we'll hear Choosy Thief from Believe It or Not, and we'll finish off with The Haunting Hour, an episode from May 19th, 1948, titled Murder Is My Business.
The confession you are about to hear is an actual tape recording.
All right, read the statement, please.
I make this confession of my own free will because it is true. There's not been any force or violence used upon my person to induce me to make these statements. Without promise of immunity or reward or gratuity, I confess.
You understand, of course, that your statement will be made public through the radio program Confession.
Yes, I do.
Your name, for the purpose of this broadcast, will be George S. Decker. Do you understand that? George, do you understand?
Yes.
You are listening to Confession. The case history of the subject referred to as George S. Decker is a matter of documented record. You will hear the story of his crime experience as told in his own words.
All right, continue, please.
I never met anyone like her. Never.
Like whom, George?
Terry.
Terry?
Teresa. She was tall. Her hair was reddish-brown color, and, she just wasn't anything
like whom, George?
Oh, she was different. Different than my mother.
Oh.
Different than, anyone I knew. I fell in love with her the first time I met her.
How long ago was that?
Oh, that was about a year and a half ago.
You were 22 then, is that right?
No, not quite 22 then.
Mm-hmm. Were you working?
Yeah, right there in Santa Ana.
George, how did you meet Teresa?
Well, we had an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Another one of those arguments. She was always telling me what to do.
Teresa was always telling you?
Hmm?
Teresa. You and Teresa argued.
No. No, I told you, I was living with my mother. We were always arguing.
I see. You mean your mother and you argued?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she treated me like a kid. She was always telling me... Always telling me to do this, do that, eat this, don't eat that.
Georgie.
Oh, it's true. For Pete's sake, Mom, don't you think I'm old enough to know how to eat?
Georgie, please, don't be so nervous.
How can I help being nervous? All you do is worry and fret and stew about your darling little boy. Your darling little boy's not so little anymore. He can take care of himself.
Well, I know you can, dear. I never said you couldn't.
No, but you'd like to say it. Wouldn't you think it all the time, so why don't you say it? Go on, go and say it.
Georgie, please sit down. Eat.
I'm not hungry.
What is it, Georgie? What bothers you? Why do we always have these arguments over nothing?
Oh, no, it's all my fault. Now, go ahead, blame the arguments on me.
I didn't say anything was your fault, Georgie.
No, but you're thinking it, aren't you?
No.
Not much you're not.
Georgie, where are you going?
Oh, for Pete's sake, can I even go out the door without filing a report?
Georgie!
Always was. She was always trying to keep me home with her. Even as a kid, I never never got to hang around with the other kids in the neighborhood. Mom saw to that. Then when my old man died and I had to quit school and go to work, she seemed to need me more. If I wasn't working, I'd stay home with her, keeping her company, pay the rent, pay the bills. Every night I'd do crossword puzzles in the dinette. She'd do the ironing or mending or something in the kitchen. We had nothing to talk about, nothing to do. That night was the same as any other night, but I just had to get out. A guy my age needs people around him. A little action, a few laughs.
Oh, well now. Look what's all alone and feeling blue. Hi, honey.
Hi.
Well, smile a little.
I'm all right.
Come on, smile for Terry.
What for?
I know a Cocker Spaniel looks just like you. Except your ears don't droop. Come on, smile. Well, that's it. Now, are you going to buy me a drink?
You working here?
Does that make a difference?
No.
Okay, then. Mac?
Yeah?
What are you drinking?
Well, he knows. Don't you, Mac?
Usual, Terry?
Yeah. You, honey?
Bourbon. Bourbon and water.
Take scotch. It's better for the head.
I like bourbon.
Oh, now you're looking like that Cocker Spaniel again.
I don't like to be told what's good for me.
Okay, forget it. Get the whole thing. See you around.
Wait a minute.
What for?
I'm sorry. Please, have a drink with me.
Oh, now that's a little bit better.
Well, kid, what are you drinking?
Scotch. Scotch and water, Mac. It's better for my head. She wasn't the kind of girl I ever figured I'd fall for. She was beautiful, but... well, you know the type, a little too much lipstick, wrong kind of clothes. But she had a way of looking at me that started motors buzzing inside me. After the place closed, I walked Terry home. She had a room in one of those old places right downtown.
Cut it out, baby. Next thing you'll be telling me how much you love me.
Is that so terrible? Terry, listen, I...
Say, little one, it's late. You better go home to Mama.
Don't say that.
What?
Don't talk to me like that.
Okay. Good night. Goodbye. See you around.
Hey, Terry, wait. I'm sorry, honest. I gotta see you again. Please.
Look, honey, you're a nice kid, but the kind of places I like to go, you can't afford.
No? What makes you so sure?
Well,
what makes you so sure I can't afford them?
Well, since you put it that way, maybe I'm not so sure.
The next night, I took her up to Los Angeles to a real swanky restaurant and to a hotel to dance. I'd never been to either place before because I could never afford it, and I never had the occasion. But now I had to afford it, and I had the occasion. I was with Terry. We went out a lot after that, Terry and me. She even stopped wearing so much lipstick, and I bought her the right kind of clothes to wear, you know, presents. And she wore them to please me. It cost a lot of money, and they made her look more beautiful than ever.
Look, hon, I picked this dress out by myself. Like it?
Oh, gosh, that's beautiful. Where did you get that?
Tracy's. I opened a charge account there.
A charge? That's a pretty expensive store there, isn't it?
Oh, now, baby, you're sounding like a husband or something.
No, you know, I got bills to pay for my mother, too.
I know.
Oh, well, after all, you know, she...
Don't you ever forget Mama.
No. Sometimes I wish I could, but I don't.
Come here, honey.
Hmm?
Come here. Come on over here.
Sometimes we go to Laguna or over to Long Beach, but most of the time we just hang around Santa Ana in a bar, someplace really. It's always pretty late when I got home. What are you doing up so late, Mom?
Just waiting for you.
What now?
I never get a chance to talk to you anymore, Georgie.
Not tonight, Mom. It's late.
Georgie.
Not tonight, Mom.
Mr. Blackett stopped in this afternoon. He wanted his rent, Georgie. Last month's and this month's.
He'll get it. He'll get it.
Oh, sleep.
Georgie, you told me you paid the rent.
Oh, for Pete's sake, we can argue about that now.
I don't want to argue, son. I just didn't know what to say to him. I was so sure you'd paid it.
What are you trying to do, make me out a liar?
No, dear.
You let me handle it, will you? I'm running this house. You keep out of it. Keep out of all my business.
Well, I'm not interfering. It's your money. It's your business. But if you'd only...
If I'd only what? If I'd only stop spending so much on Terry. Is that what you want to say?
Georgie.
Look, you let me tell you something. You can interfere all you want, but Terry's the girl I'm going to marry.
Marry?
Mm-hmm. Marry. Suppose you think she's not good enough for your darling little boy.
Well, I didn't say that. I didn't say anything.
No, but you're thinking it.
I don't even know the girl.
Yeah, but you're thinking it anyway. You're...
Georgie, please. Please, stop it. Stop it. I haven't said anything. Stop it, please.
Mom. Mom, look, cut it out, huh? You don't have to cry like that. Mom, listen, I'm sorry. I don't know why I blow up like this. Please, Mom, don't cry.
All right. It's all right, Georgie.
I hated her for crying like that. When she cried, it made me feel sorry for her. It made me feel everything was my fault. I hated her for that. And Terry, I hated her even more for putting me in a spot like that. I had to borrow money against my salary to pay the rent. A few weeks later, I had to borrow again to pay Terry's charge account. I got sore. I told Terry to quit spending so much money.
Is it so terrible to show a girl how much you love her? Is it, honey?
Never mind that stuff, Terry. You know I can't afford it.
You talk more like a husband every day.
Well, I can't help it. No, please, Terry, you got to go easy. After all, we're not married yet.
Married?
So funny.
Well, honey, you're a sweet kid. But you and me married?
What's wrong with you and me being married? Huh? What's wrong with it?
Georgie, what would you do with your mama? Take her along on our honeymoon?
Stop that. You stop that. I said, ah! Don't you laugh at me like that. I'll kick you.
Oh, George! Stop it, George!
I swear I'm a kid.
George! Please, George.
You are listening to Confession. Before continuing with the documented record of the subject referred to as George S. Decker, the National Broadcasting Company is honored to present Mr. Richard A. McGee, Director of Corrections, Department of Corrections, State of California. Mr. McGee.
The story you are hearing tonight is a story about a man who is mentally ill. You would never know it if you saw him on the street. The mentally ill wear no scars. Yet a psychiatrist's report on him might read as follows. Passive dependent personality with emotional instability and immaturity. In simpler language, this man is totally unprepared to cope with reality. There is an explosive quality in him which might someday erupt into a crime of anger and violence. Perhaps if his parents had recognized in him these symptoms of abnormal behavior, he might have been helped. For most of the mentally ill, there is treatment and cure.
Thank you, Mr. McGee. Now to continue with Confession and the documented record of the subject referred to as George S. Decker.
Continue with your story.
I had her neck in my hands. Yeah, I can remember it easy. It was like this. I held her like this.
All right. Go on with your story.
Like this. My thumb squeezed tight into her throat.
That's all right. Why were you trying to kill her, George?
You see my thumbs?
Why were you trying to kill her, George?
Kill her? Terry?
Yes. You were trying to kill her, weren't you?
No. Not Terry, I was trying to kill...
Who?
I don't know exactly. She was Terry, but she was my mother, too.
back, I had my mother's neck in my hands. And
George, you're a sap. You're the biggest sap I know.
I was choking.
Sure, I know. Go on, get out of here.
Terry.
Go on. Get out of here.
Please, Terry.
Beat it. You can't even do a good job of murder.
I started to walk home, but I just kept on walking. My hands hurt. My fingers were cramped. My head kept spinning and buzzing. I could have killed her, but I didn't. I wanted to, but I didn't. For the first time in my life, I felt real strong, but she won anyway. Why? Everybody that passed me in the street, I felt like asking why, but I didn't. I just walked. I walked all night. By the time I got home, it wasn't night anymore.
Georgie?
Yeah, Ma?
Where have you been? I've been calling everywhere. I've been so worried.
For Pete's sake, stop worrying about me. You hear me? Stop worrying about me. If everybody let me alone.
Here, Georgie.
What's that?
A letter for you. Selective Service Board.
Selective? Let me see.
Your draft notice.
Yeah, my draft notice.
Georgie, dear.
Mom, I don't want this. I can't go into the Army. Mom, they can't take me.
Well, there's nothing you can do about it, dear.
Yeah, but I support you, don't I? Don't I support you? You're my dependent. If they took me, that you...
But, Georgie, they've taken other boys. It'd only be for a year. I could manage.
Mama, I think you want me to be drafted.
Oh, you know that's not
yeah,
so.
Yeah, sure, yeah. You don't care if they draft me. You don't care what they do to me.
Oh, Georgie.
You're all alike, you and Terry. You don't care. Well, I care. And other people care, too, even if you don't. I didn't go to work. I just sat in my room all morning. I had to think. Mom knocked on the door a couple of times, but I didn't answer. I had to think, but my head kept spinning. Wouldn't let me think of anything but Terry. I was worried about her. Knew she was sore at me. But now I needed her. My own mother had walked out on me. I needed Terry bad. Maybe if she knew how much I needed her.
Hello?
Terry?
Yes, who's this?
Terry, I have to see you.
Oh, you.
Terry, please, I have to talk to you. It's important.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Please, Terry. Terry! I called her again. I kept calling her, but she wouldn't come to the phone. I had to talk to her. I had to tell her how sorry I was. I had to tell her how much I needed her. I needed her more than ever now. I wanted to marry her. I could take care of her just like I'd been doing. She knew that. If she married me, she'd be my dependent. I'd have to take care of her. Or be drafted. Well, she liked that. Getting even more money out of me. I had to tell her, but she wouldn't answer my calls. I kept calling till it was dark, and then I went down to Mac's cocktail lounge. Terry'd be there, I figured.
Well, look who's here. Hi, George boy. Will it be?
Terry around, Mac?
Terry? She called up, said she wasn't feeling so good. Said she had a sore throat.
Oh. Yeah, that's right.
Anything I can do for you, kid?
No, thanks.
Now sit down and have a drink. You look like you can use one.
Okay.
There's something wrong?
Got my draft notice.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to see Terry. I'm going to talk to her.
Oh, sure. Can't blame you for that. She's home now, I guess.
Yeah. She always laughed when I asked her to marry me. Now she can't laugh. Now she wants me around, she'll have to marry me, right, Meg?
Well, sure. Sure, kid. She ever say anything about marrying you?
What's the matter, Meg? What are you looking like that for?
Didn't she ever tell you?
Tell me what?
About Jerry.
Jerry? Who's Jerry? Mac, who's Jerry?
Her husband.
A what?
Her husband. Doing a stretch for forgery. Been at San Quentin a couple years now. She'll be due out pretty quick. I figure you know, George. I figured she must have told you, but... Hey, wait a minute, kid. Let me fix your drink. Hey, George.
I was walking again. For some reason, I was walking back home, but when I got home, I kept on walking. My head was spinning like it did once before. My hands hurt. My fingers were cramping up. I could almost feel Terry's neck in my hands. I wanted to squeeze the life out of her, to kill her. But there was something in the way. Always, always there was something in the way. I had to get rid of it. I had to get rid of what was in the way. Standing across the street from Terry's rooming house. I stood there for an hour. Maybe 2 hours, I don't know. I saw the light in her room go out. I saw her open the window in the dark. She was going to sleep. I waited some more. Till I knew for sure she was asleep. Till the whole house looked like it was asleep. There was a brick I tripped on, one of those concrete building blocks. It was in the alley around the side of the house near the fire escape. That's where I was going. Up the fire escape. I took the brick with me. Landing. That was her room there. I could even see her through the window. Window was open. I could get inside easy. She was right there. I could see her sleeping. I started to go inside and I stopped. I couldn't do it. Not yet. She looked so beautiful, I couldn't do it. I had to walk home, but I was tired. My head hurt. My hands, even my arms hurt, too. I stopped in at Max.
All right, kiddo. I didn't expect to see you back this time of night. You get to see Terry? You okay?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Want a drink?
Okay.
Here you are. See Terry?
Mm-hmm.
And?
She's beautiful, Mac. There's nobody like her anyway.
Oh, she is. You loaded?
No.
What are you lugging a hunk of cement around for?
I need it.
What for? You ain't gonna build a wall, are you?
No, but it's just right.
It's right for what?
You better go. See you, Mac.
Where are you going, George?
Gotta go back.
Back where? Kind of late to be seeing Terry again, ain't it?
I
knew I could do it now. I had to do it. I walked back. I walked all the way back. A long way. This time I could do it right. No alleys, no fire escapes. This time I used my key. Why shouldn't I have a key? I had enough money invested in her. I had a right to have a key. Was dark and quiet. I felt quiet too. Relaxed. I stood there at the bed watching her sleep. Lying there with her eyes closed, she looked sad. Sad and peaceful, the way I felt. I stood there looking down at her. I don't know how long I stood there. Then I lifted the cement block. It was heavier. It was heavier than I figured, but I lifted it way up. High, right over. She moved a little, and I waited. The block was getting heavier. Her eyes opened, slow at first, then big and wide.
Georgie? What?
I brought it down. Hard. I phoned Mac at his cocktail lounge, told him what I did. He didn't believe me at first, but then he told me to stay right there. I didn't want to go anyplace anyway. I was tired. I just sat there, and pretty soon the cops came in. One of them was a detective, lieutenant, somebody or other.
Come on, Decker.
Where to?
Where to? Where do you think we take people who kill their mothers?
Mothers? I didn't kill my mother.
No? Who did?
I didn't want to kill her. I didn't want to kill my mother at all. I don't get it. I don't understand.
Sure, I know. You don't, kid. I know you don't. Ready?
I don't get it at all.
Come on.
I've just heard an actual confession. This case history of the subject referred to as George S. Decker is a matter of documented record. To protect the legal rights of the subject, names and places were changed or deleted. Technical advice for confession comes from the Office of the Director of Corrections, Department of Corrections, State of California. In a moment, you will hear again from George S. Decker.
Subject was tried in Orange County, California, for murder, first degree. Found not guilty by reason of insanity. Awarded custody, California State Department of Mental Hygiene. Confined, Mendocino State Hospital, Talmadge, California. Psychiatrist report, to date, unfavorable. An individual with deep-seated, unresolved emotional problems which will require long-range treatment. And now, George S. Decker.
I tried to tell you everything that happened, even the way I felt when it was happening. Maybe you understand, maybe you don't. Anyhow, for me, talking and telling you about it helps. People I talk to up here have a way of making things clearer. They tell me that they'll let me go when I know I'm ready to go. I don't know when that'll be. Sometimes everything seems to make sense for me. Other times I just don't know.
Confession, transcribed statements of actual crimes. These true tragedies are brought to you each week as an NBC Radio Network production in an effort to stem the nation's forward march of crime. Credit for this broadcast goes to our cast: Paul Fries, Lamont Johnson, Charlotte Lawrence, Helen Klebe, Jack Crucian. Script, Don Brinkley. Music, Michael Samogi. Script supervision, Warren Lewis. Direction, Homer Canfield. John Wall speaking. Confession, a Canfield Lewis creation, came to you from California.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not.
A five-man bowling team sponsored by Roger Schmitz in a league tournament scored 187, 188, 189, 190, and 191. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about a very choosy thief. Jean Pouquedon of Hauteville, France, sentenced to death as a habitual thief, was told that he would be released if a pure maiden were willing to marry him. A homely orphan girl stepped forward willingly, but Pouquedon took one look at her and said, "No, I'd rather marry the gallows. Hangman, do your duty." He was hanged forthwith in the city of Reims in 1234. Believe it or not.
Stay where you are. Do not break the stillness of this moment, for this is a time of mystery, a time when imagination is free and moves forward swiftly, silently. This is the Haunting Hour.
Is my business. Tomorrow is a word full of mystery, for not even the wisest seer can tell you what tomorrow brings. And today you stand on its threshold, waiting for what? Ah, yes, you say, but nothing will happen to me. And I say in reply that as surely as you doubt, one of your tomorrows, and maybe more, will be filled with adventure beyond your maddest dream, and I have proof. Listen. This is the story of one tomorrow, of what happened to a girl named Maggie Stewart. And like all stories of sudden, unexpected adventure, hers has a prologue. You will not understand this prologue. For, like Maggie, you are shrouded with the darkness of the unknown that is tomorrow. It begins on a streamliner, its silver nose pointing south, its wheels humming with speed. And in the prologue are two people, identities unknown, a man and a woman. The man sits stiffly on seat 7 in car 13. He is silent, on his face an expression of impatience. At last he gets up, walks quickly to the end of the coach, turns down the narrow corridor, and stops at the curtained doorway of the ladies' lounge. And then he says,
"Peggy, don't be a fool. Come to your seat."
"I won't, Carl. I won't. We've got to get off this train at the next stop. I tell you, I can't go on."
"That imagination of yours is driving me crazy. For heaven's sake, stop thinking about it. Come to your seat."
"I won't. I don't want to be killed. I'm not ready to die."
"Good night, Aggie. You're just plain silly."
"But he's on the train. I know he is. You've got to believe me, Carl."
"Well, I don't. You've seen him dozens of times before. I thought you did."
"He got on this train when we did in New York."
"You're scaring yourself into a fit. Now stop it. Somebody's going to notice."
"I don't care. I'm getting off this train, do you hear? I'm not going to stay here and be murdered."
"All right, all right. The next station. Anything to stop all this foolishness."
"We can take another train. We can watch and see if he gets off, too. And if he does, we..."
"What is the next station?"
"Little town. Roslyn, I think."
"Then it's settled. Are you coming to your seat?"
"No."
"Well, I'm going to take a nap. You'd better wake me when we get there. I paid for that blooming seat, and I'm going to sit in it."
two people on a train, and their companion is death. But what has all this to do with Maggie Stewart? Give patience to your ear. Listen. The streamliner comes to a stop. The station is marked Roslyn. It is strangely empty. A girl comes running up the platform stairs, a small suitcase in one hand, a white silk scarf in the other, and a large black purse under her arm. She looks hastily down the line of coaches. A single porter is leaning out from the steps of a car just ahead. No one is getting off the streamliner. The girl catches her breath.
This way, miss. All aboard.
Train to Greenville?
Sure is, miss.
Oh, I made it.
She climbs the steps of car 13. The porter reaches for her suitcase, but she darts it onto the platform. Peers through the door window. The coast is clear. So far, so good. She pushes hard on the stubborn door, makes a few cautious steps in the narrow corridor, quickly goes through a curtained doorway into the washroom. She has escaped the porter, but still she is not alone. A woman stands against the wall, her face strained with fright.
Was that town, Rosalind?
Yes, it was. Ooh, I'm out of breath. I nearly didn't make it.
What's the next stop?
I think Pell City, but maybe this train doesn't stop there. I'm not sure. Oh, me, I ran all the way.
You came in so suddenly, you frightened me.
Oh, did I? I'm sorry.
Ring the porter's bell there, and he'll come for your bag.
Oh, no, I'll just slip it in here against the wall. I'm not going very far.
Oh, that's a gun.
Oh, don't think I'm a criminal or something. I had it wrapped in this scarf here so nobody would see it until I could put it away, and now
What would a young lady like you be doing with a revolver?
Well, now, that's exactly what I told Aunt Margaret people would say. Oh, here, I'll put it in my pocketbook. Aunt Margaret's so old-fashioned. Imagine, she came flying down to the station just to give me that revolver.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. Uncle Jim used to make her carry it. He was on the road so much, so Aunt Margaret, well, she's very fond of me, and I took it just to please her. Is something the matter? You look...
Oh, no, I'm all right, thank you. It's the train, the motion.
Well, maybe a cup of water.
Oh, no, it's nothing. Don't think about it. You said you weren't going far. How far?
Just 4 hours from here. To spend a whole week on a farm a few miles outside of Greenville. A girlfriend of mine has it.
Oh, vacation?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's all so unexpected. That's why I nearly missed the train. Maybe... Why don't you sit down here? Maybe you'll feel better sitting down.
Oh, I'm quite all right now. I'd rather stand.
Oh, well, I work in the Roslyn Library. I didn't start there till last March, so I'm not really entitled to a vacation this year. But with the holidays coming like they do, Mrs. Hart said I might have the time off. Is a vacation for you, too?
You might call it that.
Guess you're used to riding trains. Oh, has the conductor been by to take the tickets?
I don't know. I can't really remember.
Oh, I really am in a fix. At the last minute, I couldn't get a reservation. Only a ticket for the coach train tonight.
You mean you don't have a seat?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, listen.
What is it?
Well, there's a man on this train that I've been avoiding. Would you look out in the corridor for me? I think I heard him. Just see if there's a man out there.
All right. Is he somebody you know? Not a soul there.
Well, to tell you the truth, he frightens me a little. But it's nothing. So you don't have a reservation?
No. Do you think they'll put me off? Oh, Aunt Margaret said they were sure to, but I do have a ticket.
I don't know. I hear they're very strict.
Well, I thought because I'm not going very far that I could just stay in here.
Well, there's no need for you to do that. Take my seat for a little while.
Oh, no, I couldn't do that.
Oh, I insist. I'd be happy for you to have it. In a way, you'd be doing me a favor, and I really can't sit there. The motion of the car. I'd be much better off in here lying down.
Oh, but I don't think it's right for me to deprive
you. But you're not depriving me. And this trip means more to you anyway.
I would hate to be kicked off.
Then you run along. Number 7 on the right. There's a middle-aged man on the opposite seat. He's probably sound asleep, snoring.
Well, you're sure now that I'm not... Well, I suppose I could wait till we're nearly to Greenville and then give the conductor my ticket and explain.
Of course. And then if he puts you off, it'll be all right. You'll be where you're going. You run along now.
Well, I will then. Thank you so much. Oh, I suppose my suitcase will be all right here.
I'll watch it for you. Oh, here. Don't forget your purse.
And Aunt Margaret's ominous revolver. Thank you so much.
Goodbye for now. I'll see you later on.
And I do hope you're better. Number 7?
That's right. Where the man is asleep.
Maggie Stewart sits quietly, her eyes following the swift-moving landscape of trees and hills. Directly in front of her is a sleeping man.
But he is silent now, his head tilted back on the seat. There's something about him, something eerie. Faint chatterings come from the other occupants of the car. At last, the train slows down, stops. And Maggie notices the station is Pell City. Still, the man opposite her does not move. The train starts again. The cars groan and jerk. And then, like a picture in slow motion, the man slides from the seat into a limp mass of death at her feet.
He's dead.
Somebody help me, please.
Oh, look.
Somebody.
Why, look, the seat's covered with blood.
Don't touch it. Don't touch it.
What's the matter? Don't crowd the aisle. Some of you get back to your seat.
I thought he was sleeping. He was dead all the time.
Yeah, now, don't get hysterical, young lady. Everybody be quiet. Quiet, please. Now, maybe I can find out what this is all about.
No use looking for his pulse, conductor. Man's stone dead.
Oh, please. Please help me out of here.
Hey, step up on the seat. Stand back, please. Let the young lady out.
You're right. He is dead. Shot. Who are you?
Name's Wayne O'Hara, detective sergeant, New York City. Murder's my business.
Murder? Good night. Quiet. Let's have quiet here, please. Well, this is a case for the police. Young lady, do you know anything about this?
Oh, no. No, sir. I thought he was asleep. She said he wasn't. And then when the train jerked like that...
Who said he was asleep?
Oh, the woman in the lounge. This is her seat. I was only sitting in it.
Well, where's your seat?
I don't have one. I got on at Roslyn.
No reservation, huh? Do you know this man?
No. I never saw him before. Never.
You got a ticket?
Yes, sir. Right here in my purse. You see, I'm only going to Greenville, conductor, and I thought...
Yeah. What's the matter?
His purse. It isn't mine. It belonged to that woman in the lounge. I must have picked it up by mistake.
Mighty funny.
Well, she's there in the lounge. She wasn't feeling well. My suitcase is there, too.
Well, we'll soon find out.
Sergeant O'Hara.
You take charge. I'll be right back. Stand back, please. Let me by. Stand by.
What's your name?
Maggie Stewart. Oh, I don't know anything about this, honestly.
Let's see that purse.
Here.
Must be a card. Some kind of identification. Ah, yes, here's a wallet. This is Leonard Carl Tatum, New York City. Is that the woman's name?
I don't know. I didn't ask her name.
Let's see. Bag up there on the rack. Initials LCT. Well, might be hers.
Oh, please. I can't stand here looking at him.
Well, then sit down, Miss Stewart. Over here. Oh, please, lady, don't block the aisle.
Oh, that poor girl, she's white as a sheet. I have some smelling salts in my bag up there.
Oh, no, I'll be all right, thank you.
There's nobody in the ladies' lounge, nobody at all.
Oh, but she must be.
Would you know her if you saw her again?
Oh, yes, of course I would.
No suitcase in the lounge either. Nothing.
Well, then where is it? I left it there, right there. Well, you just didn't see it.
Well, here's the dead man's wallet, conductor. It was Leonard Carl Tatum, also of New York. His purse belongs to his wife.
Well, then she's the woman I talked with, don't you see? You've got to find her. She's on the train somewhere.
There now, young lady. Take it easy.
Oh, look. Look there under the seat, the one I was sitting in.
Well.
Don't touch it, conductor. It might be fingerprints. Here, let me. I'll use this handkerchief.
The murder weapon. A six-shooter.
Equipped with a silencer.
Well, don't look at me like that. I don't know how it got there. I never saw it before. Oh, please search the train.
Yes, I suggest you do, conductor, before the next stop.
Oh, she killed him. I know she did. That's why she said he was sleeping. She wants you to think I did.
No. That's for the police to decide.
Oh, but it's so true. It's so clear now. There's no use searching for.
Why do you say that?
Because now I understand what happened. She switched pocketbooks with me. She insisted I take her seat. And then when the train stopped at Pell City, she took my suitcase and got off. She planned it all so I'd be accused of murder.
When Maggie Stewart, off on a vacation, boarded the Streamliner without a reservation, she started on an amazing adventure of murder. In the ladies' lounge, Maggie met an older woman who offered her her reservation. And sitting there, Maggie was horrified when the man on the seat opposite, whom she had thought asleep, fell in a heap on the floor, dead. When the conductor arrived, and with him a man who identified himself as Sergeant Wayne O'Hara of the New York Police, Maggie discovered she was carrying the pocketbook belonging to the woman, a Mrs. Tatum, who had disappeared from the lounge, taking Maggie's suitcase with her. Then she realized it was planned. Planned so that she, Maggie Stewart, would be accused of murder. It is a few minutes later when the conductor, Sergeant O'Hara, and Maggie have gone the length of the train in search of the mysterious Mrs. Tatum, wife of the dead man.
Well, that does it. If she's not here in the club car, she's certainly not on this train.
I knew it was no use, conductor. I tell you, she got off at Pell City. I know she did.
I think Miss Stewart's right, conductor.
Well, then I'll have to turn everything over to the police in Greenville as soon as we get there. 45 minutes from now.
And they'll arrest me. What'll I do?
Now, might be the whole thing will clear itself up. Sergeant O'Hara, since you're a representative of the law, you mind taking over the custody of this young lady till we get to Greenville?
Glad to, conductor.
And that lethal weapon, you better hold on to that, too.
All right, conductor.
I guess I better go then and get my passenger settled down.
Mr. O'Hara, what am I going to do?
Now, just sit down in this chair. Relax. And don't worry.
But what'll they do to me? Oh, it's my scarf. It's caught on something. You're typing, I think.
Well, that's a novel way of handcuffing a young lady, isn't it? There. Now you're free again. And just sit down. Take it easy.
But I don't...
What's the matter?
Mr. O'Hara. That is your name, isn't it?
Detective Sergeant Wayne O'Hara, New York.
You don't think I killed the man, do you?
Frankly, no.
We could only find her. It's awful when your hands are tied like this, when you can't...
Oh, but you can, Miss Stewart.
Can what?
You can at least look for her yourself.
Oh, but we have. We look
for... No,
no.
I mean back in Pell City, where she got off.
Oh.
Why not? Find her. Prove your innocence. You wait till the Greenville police get going, it might be too late. I haven't got cuffs on you.
You go back with me? Back to Pell City?
You say the word.
Yes, but how'd we get off the train?
Oh, that wouldn't be hard. Look out the window. We're in the mountains. On the upgrades, we'll slow down.
Oh.
That's only a suggestion. Always been a man of action myself. Murder's my business, and I'd like to see these things, too.
And now I'm afraid murder is my business. All right, Sergeant O'Hara, let's go.
Hey, you two all right back there? If them tools get in your way...
Oh, no, it's all right. We're very thankful for this lift.
Take to Pell City?
Oh, now, about half hour, I reckon. I just get you relax. Enjoy the scenery. Mighty pretty country around here, about.
Funny old cutter, isn't it?
Sergeant O'Hara, do you really think we're doing the right thing? How can we ever find her?
How many hotels are there in Pell City?
I don't know. Must be a dozen, maybe 20. Why?
Well, she's in one of them. Bound to be. Oh. Woman who just killed a man? She's nervous. What she wants to do is go somewhere and be alone. Think. Pull herself together.
Well, maybe that's so, but who will you ask for? She's certainly not going to be registered as Mrs. Tatum.
No, you're quite right. But it's really very simple.
Simple? What do you mean?
She walked off with your pocketbook, didn't she? Well, we'll ask for Maggie Stewart. Miss Maggie Stewart, please. Stewart. S-T-E-W-A-R-T. Maggie Stewart.
Hello. Let me speak to Miss Stewart, please.
Stewart? We have several Stewarts.
Her first name is Maggie. Maybe she's registered as Margaret.
No Margaret Stewart, but we do have a Miss Maggie Stewart. Room 520. I'll ring her.
Oh, no. No, don't ring her. I'll drop by to see her. Thank you.
You're welcome, madam.
Oh. Oh, dear. What do I do now? Oh, Maggie Stewart, have you lost your nerve? Operator, give me the police, quick. Hello. Hello, this is Mrs. Leonard Carl Tatum speaking. What I've got to tell you is a matter of life and death, so listen carefully. In Greenville, the police are searching for a girl who calls herself Maggie Stewart. Yes, she murdered my husband. In a few minutes, I'll be at the McMillan Hotel. I'll be wearing a white silk scarf. If you follow me, I'll lead you to Maggie Stewart. But if you interfere, if you stop me, she'll get away again. Be at the McMillan Hotel in 10 minutes. Oh. Sergeant O'Hara, quick, I found her!
mister. You know, I'm just a bellboy around here. I ain't supposed to let anybody in these rooms.
Sergeant O'Hara, look. My suitcase on the bed.
And it is the woman from the train.
Yes, but where is she?
Gone. Oh. Went out about 2 hours ago.
You know where?
I might, if I was encouraged to remember.
Yeah. Here's $5. Remember?
Middle-aged woman, wasn't she? Kind of tall, well-dressed.
Oh, that's right. But where'd she go?
She sent me out to rent a car. Said she was going to drive over to Lake Winnet. Asked me how to get there.
Lake Winnet? Why would she go there? Oh, I see.
Listen, we'll rent a car. We hurry, we can make it before nightfall.
Now I know where she is.
But I don't understand, Sergeant O'Hara. Please tell me what this is all about.
Only a matter of deduction, Miss Stewart. I happen to know this lake. There's only one house on it. So Mrs. Tatum must be there.
But how could you know? I'm frightened. Well, you're stopping.
Mm-hmm. We'll walk up. We'll surprise her.
Then let me stay here in the car. I'll wait for you.
No. We've gone this far together. You've got to come.
Sergeant O'Hara, wait.
What is it, Miss Stewart?
I know you're not a detective.
Of course. I thought you did. Ever since we started for this place. Tell me, how'd you find out? When did I give myself away?
In the train. My scarf caught on your typing. It's initialed. The letters don't stand for Wayne O'Hara.
You're clever. I'm a fool. Forgot to take it off. All right, come on. We're wasting time. There's going to be another murder.
Please let me go. There's no one here. The house is dark.
There's a car on the drive, under the trees. Come along. There's a side door.
You have a key to this place. Who are you? Who?
In a moment, we'll be inside. Keep quiet. Don't talk. Stand behind me. Still got this gun in my pocket. Gun for the train. Come on. Follow me.
Stand where you are if you move out.
Oh.
I can see you both in the open doorway. Close it. Go on, close it. Now then, I knew you'd follow me, Mr. Donald Graves Lambert. In Pell City, I said he's determined to find me, and why not let him? What better place to have this whole thing over with than at his own country house?
You do know all about me, don't you, Mrs. Tatum?
This is your house?
Didn't you suspect that, Miss Stewart?
Why'd you bring that girl? You're a coward. But I didn't fool you, did I, Mr. Lambert?
No. Miss Stewart, this woman knew I was out to kill her. She suspected I was on a train. That's why she hid in the lounge. But how did you know your husband was dead, Mrs. Tatum?
I saw him. Around the corner of the corridor when I mustered up enough nerve to step outside the lounge for a moment. And there was something about
him. Oh, please. Please let me go.
You'll never leave this house alive, Miss Stewart.
Oh.
In a moment, I'll turn on the lights for Mr. Lambert's benefit. It would be a shame for him to die without seeing the woman who killed him.
She's right, Miss Stewart. I knew her husband, but I haven't the faintest notion what Mrs. Tatum looks like. She counted on that when she gave you her seat. She thought I'd kill you. And then from the pocketbook, you'd be identified as Mrs. Tatum.
Oh, please, I beg of you. I know nothing of all this. I'll never say a word if you only...
Miss Stewart, you're forgetting. You're wanted for murder. She killed me, she'll kill you to cover up.
Because killing you, Mr. Lambert, is the only way to avenge my husband's brutal death.
Brutal? For him, no death could be brutal enough. You and he, Mrs. Tatum, killed my wife. As surely as you're standing there, you murdered her.
You're crazy.
You drained her of one fortune with your lecherous blackmailing schemes. And when her money was gone, when you threatened to expose her little misunderstanding to me, she took the shortest road she knew. How much she loved me, this woman you killed. And before she died, she told me about you and your husband. And it's taken me a year to find you. 12 months of searching for this night.
You know more than I thought you knew, Mr. Lambert. Now look at me. Take one good last look.
And Margaret's revolver.
Yes, it was in your purse. Remember, Miss Stewart?
Yes, and I remember something else. Mr. Lambert. Mr. Lambert.
Keep your hands up. Don't move.
Aunt Margaret's revolver and all its life, it never had a bullet in it.
That's not true. That's not true.
Yes, Mrs. Tatum, it is true. But this gun now. This gun that killed your husband. This gun has only one bullet missing. You better put up your hands.
Mr. Lambert, don't. It's no use. I didn't tell you, but I called the police.
Okay. Pick him up. We heard everything you said. It's better than any confession I ever came across. All right, keep him up there, Mrs. Tatum. Well, Miss Stewart, cleverer than I thought. Never caught me, huh?
I thought you were trying to help, but you weren't. You were only using me to kill Mrs. Tatum.
Officer, this man is a murderer.
Yes, officers, you're quite right.
You've got a score to even with her, too.
I gotta warn you. Anything you
say... Yes, yes, we know, we know. But listen, this young lady here was wrongly accused. She had nothing to do with any of it.
We heard all that from outside. All right, come on. We're gonna take you two in.
Then I can go, officer?
Sure, after a few questions. We got you to thank for everything.
Well, what else could I do? I was accused of murder, so murder was my business.
From shadows and stillness, mystery weaves a spell of strangest fascination, charging the mind with doubts and fears. For mystery is a strange companion, a living memory in the haunting hour.
Going to do it for the Relic Radio show for this week. There's more old-time radio at relicradio.com. You'll also find links there to all the other shows, our forum, Shoutcast stream, Facebook page. Everything Relic Radio can be found on its website, appropriately so. If you'd like to help support this and all the Relic Radio shows, you'll also find a link there to donate. I appreciate anything you're able to help out with. And thank you to those who have, as always. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday. I'll be back next week with a brand new episode of the Relic Radio Show.